White Rocket Entertainment.
White Rocket Entertainment, podcast number 280.
10, 9, 8, 7, ignition sequence started. All engines are started. We have ignition, 2, 1, 0. We have a liftoff. We have a liftoff, and it's lighting up the area. It's just like daylight here at Kennedy Space Center. The Saturn V is moving off the pad. It is now clear of the tower.
Hello, and welcome to the White Rocket Podcast, brought to you by White Rocket Entertainment. And that's it. We're just brought to you by White Rocket Entertainment tonight, and by our many patrons on Patreon. I'll say a little bit more about that in a little bit, but we appreciate our Patreon members, and they are the primary motivating force now keeping us on the air. We are no longer part of any other network but our own. More news about that in just a minute. It's one long conversation with a variety of guests about the best of popular culture. I'm Van Allen Plexico, and this week we are joined by our semi-regular co-host on the White Rocket Show, John Ringer. Welcome back aboard the show, John.
Glad to be here again, Van.
And, John, we are here to do our hourly, daily, what's it going to be, Game of Thrones podcast for Season 7. Well,
this is the kickoff of a 24/7 stream of consciousness podcast with us where we discuss Game of Thrones.
That's correct. That's it. That's exactly it. Yeah, John has always advocated from the beginning that more is better when it comes to Game of Thrones podcasts. We just can't seem to do enough. So, go ahead and tell the folks what our current plan is for scheduling these, because it was your idea. I'll let you tell them.
Well, our plan for Game of Thrones, because we do need to do a bunch of Witchbone podcasts coming up, our plan is to do one now at the kickoff of the season, one kind of in the middle of the season, and then one as a wrap-up after it's over, after the 7 episodes.
There we go. Since there's only 7, and that was one of the first things I was going to mention, is that there's only 7 episodes, and we've only got 6 left. Can you believe? I mean, we've watched 1 episode this season, and now we've only got 6 left until the end of the season. That's kind of sad in a way. We're already only 6 to go. But I got to say up front, and I want to start doing this on all of our shows now, is that we welcome emails, tweets, and whatever other ravens, whatever other ways you have of contacting us, because we want to hear from our listeners. We've had a robust community of listeners and discussion on Twitter, but you can also reach us through email. Currently, the best way to get to John and me by email is through our Wishbone email, which is just auwishbone@gmail.com. We may have to set up a separate account for the White Rocket network that's not the non-AU Wishbone. But for right now, if you want to email us, auwishbone@gmail.com, we'll get straight to John and me. But we appreciate all of our listeners. Our network is going through something of a transition right now, and we want to make sure we keep all of our existing listeners and we find new ones. So help us spread the word and get our shows out to a growing, wider audience. What has happened, John, and you don't know about this yet because it just happened over the last couple of days, is that we have always, not our, the AU Wishbone is a whole other thing. Our football show, our sports show, has always been part of the War Eagle Sports Radio Network and the War Eagle Reader. But our pop culture shows, and you folks out there may have noticed, we've had an increasingly large, an exponentially growing number of them over the last year. They've always, most of them have been part of the Earth Station One Network. We are no longer part of the Earth Station One Network. It was a mutual, perfectly amicable decision between Mike Faber, the boss over there, and me. It's just that they are going in one direction, and we are kind of going in another. We are growing our own network and have a whole bunch of shows. And it was just getting kind of hard to mesh. It's one thing when we were one gear in their clock. It's another thing when we both have a clock. It's kind of hard to mesh those together. So Mike and I chatted about it and decided that they'll go their way and we'll go ours. Perfectly amicable. We wish nothing but the best, and we've been so happy with our association with the Earth Station One Network over the last 5 years. Can't thank them enough for all they've done to help us get publicity. But now we're going to go off on our own and be the White Rocket Entertainment Network entirely on our own. What that means, though, is that we no longer have that big network posting on Facebook, posting on their blogs, posting on Twitter about our show and other shows. So we need you, the listeners, to step it up a little bit and help us get the word out. Okay. And we've got a bunch of shows, of course. We got our Owner Managed Secret podcast. We got Open Wheel, the racing show, which is a new episode recording tomorrow night where Alan and I will be talking about Formula One and IndyCar. We've got our Comics with Normies with Jared. We've got our the White Rocket show you're listening to now. We've got a bunch of the Avengers Assemble show has moved over now and is part of the network too. So lots and lots of cool stuff. You should be getting almost a show every two or three days. Some days you get two shows in a row on this network. So anyway, I'm very excited about that. So now let's get to Game of Thrones, John. Last night was Sunday night. Season 7 kicked off. It's only a 7-episode season. And what did you think? Well, before we even dig into the show, I'm just looking at Entertainment Weekly's headline: Game of Thrones Season 7 premiere ratings smash HBO records. Game of Thrones returned after its longest wait yet to the biggest overnight audience ever by far. 16.1 million viewers. They call it an incredible 16.1 million viewers across all HBO platforms, including repeats and streaming and DVR. A stunning 50% increase from last year's opener, despite it airing in a time of the year that has generally lower ratings, the summer. And even bigger numbers than last year's finale, which is pretty amazing. So it got rave reviews and the show's first 100% score on Rotten Tomatoes. Holy cow. Also, the show inspired 2.4 million tweets, making it the show's most tweeted episode of all time and TV's most Emmy-honored drama, though they got to wait till 2018. So there they are. We've got 12 episodes left over 2 years, and they're getting ratings that are just astronomical and through the roof. What do you think about that before we dig into the episode?
Well, I think it's one of the few things in, you know, right now in American popular culture, this kind of appointment viewing that people can watch together, you know, at a certain date and time. It's not a streaming thing. You could watch whenever and watch the whole thing. And also think, like, it's a great story that we don't know how it ends. So many of the things that are being done now are remakes or they're, you know, book conversions to movies, and we know the ending. But in this case, we don't have any freaking idea how this thing is going to end. So that just really adds a lot to it. And also, the other part is this show has, you know, this is the seventh season. And in 99% of cases, when a show gets to its seventh season, it's much worse than it was in, like, season two or three.
Yeah.
But this show, in some ways, I think the last two episodes of season six were two of the best four or five episodes they've ever done. Yeah. So they're shortening the seasons so they could spend more on special effects and more on big event kind of battle stuff. So I'm excited and I'm fired up and I can't wait to see what happens.
Yeah, I think that once the whole thing is done and people start watching it, binge watching on video, on streaming, on HBO Go and on Blu-ray and whatever, the seasons won't be an issue anymore because you'll have the whole thing, you know. So It'll just be coming at you 1 hour after another, running together until you reach the end. So this is only an issue now while we're breathlessly waiting. And the only time the gap between this season and the next season is going to be a problem is when the seven this season are over. You know, I mean, it's funny because we've been waiting over a year for this episode we saw last night, but once the whole thing is done, people will wait like 5 seconds and then they'll just binge right on into the next one, you know? So these kind of things come and go, and they're no longer going to be an issue once it's aired the first time, I don't think. So it is going to be amazing to see what they do with the money that they're saving by only doing 7 and then 6 episodes. It's just kind of mind-blowing. I mean, these are like Marvel Cinematic Universe movies or something with the effects and everything for a TV show.
Yes.
It's amazing.
Their budget is if you go back and watch some of the early ones, their budget now for these episodes is exponentially greater on a per episode basis than it was in some of the early ones.
It ought to be, because they probably should be making tons of money now off of this. My gosh, HBO should be raking in the cash off of this. So yeah. You can see why they want to do spinoffs, right? I mean, my first thought was, but then I thought, dang, I mean, if we've only got 13 episodes over 2 years, why not do something else with it? You know, I wish they would do Egg and Dunkin' Egg.
They're not going to do that.
Oh, but that would be so cool. I want Dunkin' Egg. Oh, man. Well, we'll see. But anyway, so what did you think about episode 701, Dragonstone?
I enjoyed it. I had heard all this stuff about how the pace was going to be faster this year and all this big stuff was going to happen. But this was really the kind of episode we've seen sometimes where it was, there was some stuff that happened, some important stuff, but this was mainly like a setting things up and moving the pieces around the board kind of episode and getting things ready for upcoming events. So I think it was kind of teeing up the things that are going to happen this season. There obviously wasn't a huge battle or, a big character death or anything. But I did really enjoy it. It was great to be back there, and there was a lot of really cool stuff. And there was they did the cold opening thing, which they've only done a couple of times, where they have a scene, lead straight out before the credits, and this was Arya and the Frey. So it was really well done.
Well, let's roll into that about Arya, that's for opening scene. I'll just say that I did see maybe two people I know, and I'm on social media a lot. I saw a couple of people on Facebook say that they didn't like it, or they thought it was not, that it was disappointing in some way, and I'm like, you're crazy. I mean, you're right.
The episode?
Yeah, this episode. Because, like you say, it was setting. I mean, every episode can't be Hardhome. Every episode can't be Danny and the fleet leaving to go, that scene we've been waiting for 20 years to see on television,
I mean, not just that, with the scene of her leaving, but that episode, the last episode, is one of the best episodes they ever did. I mean, that episode was amazing. That had the whole Cersei blowing up the church and all that stuff too. So that was an incredible episode. So was there going to be a drop off from that? Sure.
Of course. Yeah. Because the first episode of a season, like you say, it's got to set the table. It's got to establish where everybody is and what's going on. And by the way, the only issue I have with that is that they do play very fast and loose with how much time has passed among the various threads. Cause you'll be in one plot thread and you're like, oh, there's been about 6 months go by. You'll be another plot thread. Oh, it's like immediately after the last episode. And then you'll be another thread. Oh, it's been a month. Oh, it's been 6 months. Oh, it's like immediately after. Like, the Arya scene happens, and then just a couple of scenes later, people are referring to it like it's a historical event that everybody's found out about, which would have taken a little while,
Sure.
So I'm going, well, when did that happen? Because you can't tell, did it happen 5 minutes ago? Did it happen 5 months ago? So at least we finally saw Sam's, not Sam's baby, but Gilly's baby, a little older. Because that baby's been like Captain America in suspended animation for the last several seasons, So
now that kid should be entering the university at Old Town himself.
That's right. I'm saying so. And meanwhile, Sansa is like 7 feet tall now. She's a statuesque woman. It's funny because in Showtime, it was like 2 years ago, she was a little girl, and now it's so funny, the scene she has with Littlefinger. He's supposed to be like almost a father figure, yet creepy uncle, yet he wants her kind of thing, and yet he has to look up at her.
Mm-hmm.
That just cracks me up when they have the two of them standing there and he's looking up into her eyes and she's towering over him. So, all right, so let's roll on into the opening. The opening scene was awesome. How quickly did you figure out that was Arya?
Very quickly.
Yes.
I mean, I thought there was a chance for a second maybe they were doing a flashback thing,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
but I didn't think they would do that. And then I realized, oh, Arya killed him.
Right.
So therefore, it's her.
And then, how quickly did you figure out that she was not just killing them, but poisoning them? Because I have a thing here.
Oh, as soon as she waved the pitchers out, I knew she was going to kill everybody.
Well, I felt like they tipped their hand a little too much. They telegraphed it because whenever the director has cameras linger lovingly on something that seems inconsequential, they're drawing your attention to it. And if you're paying attention, then you're like, oh, right. Because they actually zoomed in on the tavern girls or whatever handing out mm-hmm. the pictures.
Yes.
As soon as they did that, I'm like, okay, you just hit me in the face with it. Okay. If they hadn't shown that, then you'd have been like, I wonder how she's going to do it. But as soon as they zoomed in on a picture, you're like, oh, okay, poison coming. Got it. So I thought that was a little too much on the nose maybe, but I'm not complaining. Sure. But I'm not complaining because it was so awesome.
We haven't talked about this, but we're past the books now.
Yes.
Far past the books. Yes. And it's, as a book reader, it's a little scary. And so, but this is something that everybody has been wanting forever, you know, the big revenge, the continuation of the revenge for the Red Wedding and the North Remembers and all that.
Right.
And this was, you know, killing Walder Frey was part of it, but this was, you know, wiping out, you know, the bulk of the rest of the Freys in one swoop. Those responsible for killing, you know, everybody else, the rest of the Starks that were there. That was it was huge.
I liked as well when when quote unquote Walder Frey stopped the is that his daughter, his wife?
Oh, his wife.
Okay, his latest wife, right? Stopped her from drinking the wine, but the way he said it was, I'll not waste, you know, good wine on a woman or whatever. And I'm like, okay, he doesn't want to kill the little girl. I got it. And then he told her, tell them the winner remembers. By the way, we got to remind our audience just so they'll know where we're coming from. John has read all the books multiple times. I've read all the books except the most recent one once each. I read the first one twice and regretted it. The first time through, Ned's a hero. The second time through, you hate him as an idiot. Oh, they referenced that. All right, put a bookmark there, but let me finish my thought. I didn't read the last one, the most recent one, Dance with Dragons, except for bits and pieces, because by the time the show started, I didn't feel the need to. I'll go back and read Dance with Dragons when the show is over, if the other books ever come out, just to kind of get the other version of the story. And we can talk a little about that before we're done. But did you catch... and that's going to slip my mind.
Sansa said it.
What did she say? Remind me.
She said, you have to be smarter than Father and Rob.
Yes.
Because they did stupid things and they died.
Amen. I'm like, yes, Sansa. Yes, that's exactly it. They didn't just do stupid things. They tried to be good. Well, I would say Ned tried to be good. And evil always wins because good is dumb, right? That's what Spaceball taught us. And Ned was good and dumb, and so he got it. Rob was too trusting in a situation where he knew he was ticking off treacherous people like the Freys, and he still went into their house because he felt like he needed them, and he paid the price. So, yeah, that's exactly right. I want to talk about, because let's not close the book on Arya yet, but since you mentioned it too, we're talking about Sansa and Jon. I want to talk about the Jon Sansa Littlefinger situation here, because I think that people want to hear about this. People want to talk about this. I certainly do. It's clear that there are two competing forces, okay? When you have Jon and Sansa alone together, they're disagreeing a little bit, but they love each other, they trust each other, and they want to be a good partnership. When you have Sansa and Littlefinger together, Littlefinger is just doing everything he can to undermine that relationship, isn't he? Because he's got to peel Jon away from Sansa or Sansa away from Jon so that he can get with Sansa and be the king, right? She's like his ticket, as he sees it. And when they're all together, that was really saddening to me. I don't want to say disappointing, because I knew it was going to happen. They set it up, and they set it up, and when they show something in the preview, in the previously on, you know they're setting it up. But they kept stressing how Sansa was not completely happy with Jon being King of the North, and Littlefinger was doing his little smirk every time Sansa felt upset about that. So give me our audience your thoughts about Sansa, Jon, and Littlefinger as it stands right now, where you think that's going.
All right. Before, in last season, before they came out and said Jon was King of the North, Jon and Sansa are on the wall talking, and Jon says, "I'm preparing the Lord's Chamber for you in Winterfell. You're the Lady of Winterfell now."
Right.
And Sansa says, "Mom and Dad's room?" And he's like, "Yes, you're the Lady of Winterfell. You're a true Stark. I'm not." Mm-hmm. And she was like, "Okay." And then they proclaim him King of the North. And it's like, what does that mean for her? Is he king of all the North, but she's Lady of Winterfell? Or is he supposed to be both now? Is he Lord of Winterfell and King of the North and she's nothing? So I think that is a big piece of the tension. Sansa, you know, has been through enough that she understands she needs to have a secure power base.
Yeah.
And... you know, she feels she's obviously in a much safer position than she has been in a long time. But at some point, you know, she needs to have her own thing. And so, you know, maybe Jon could be King of the North and she could be Lady of Winterfell, you know, and Jon's base could be somewhere else or something. So the other part is, you know, Littlefinger's trying to play her, but I also think Sansa's trying to play Littlefinger.
Yeah.
Like they need the Knights of the Vale, so she hasn't told him that, stuff it, I'm never going to marry you or be with you or anything, because she understands the long game.
Yeah.
And she understands they need the Knights of the Vale. They don't want them to ride away and disappear behind their walls. You know, it would be great if they hung around during winter for the battles to come. So, and they'll stay if Littlefinger tells them to stay. So she's trying to kind of manipulate Littlefinger and drag him along so that that happens, so they have the Knights of the Vale in case they need them. And Littlefinger's trying to get her, you know, to play in his direction. So, like, if Jon goes off and does stuff, then, you know, theoretically he could, you know, he can convince Sansa that she has to marry him or whatever, and they could rule the Vale and the North together and eventually move towards ruling the whole kingdom. But I'm very concerned about a Sansa Jon split.
Yes.
Schism. You know that they're going to do something stupid.
Exactly. Exactly. I'm so concerned about that.
But I also know that Jon is not going to sit around Winterfell. He's going to go off and do stuff.
Yeah.
And so I feel like when Jon goes off and does stuff, that Sansa can stay there and basically rule the North while he's out running around, you know, leading armies on the battlefield and stuff.
Yeah, because the last time everybody left Winterfell, the Ironborn showed up and burned the kids and took over and everything.
That's right. They're not going to leave it that naked again.
Yeah, no, that was a mistake. Well, here's a couple things. I agree with you. That's a great point. That even as Sansa, when she's with Jon, that's kind of where I was going, and kind of didn't finish my thought out, my own fault. Even when she's with Jon, we're starting to get a little bit of that rivalry, a little bit of that resentment, a little bit of that, and that's what Littlefinger's fanning, right? He's counting on that to fester. But like you say, when Sansa is with Littlefinger, she's not going to him either, right? She's not saying, "Oh, Littlefinger, protect Lord Baelish, protect me from Jon. He's pissing me off." No, she's treating him worse than she treats Jon, and she's not treating Jon bad, but you know what I mean. I mean, she's actually being dismissive of him up to a point, as much as she thinks she can get away with. Is that fair?
Yes.
like she said, oh, I'm sure it was something clever that you were going to say, you know, as she walks away. Mm-hmm. That's about as dismissive as she really wants to be with him before she ticks him off. And he says, all right, I'm going to take my army and leave, and I'll tell the Lannisters where you are, you know. So here's the other thing about Sansa, though, that we haven't really talked about ever, is that Sansa, interestingly, has never really met a man she actually likes and could see herself with in the future. In other words, Sansa has always been a political pawn, right? She's been a piece on the board that somebody else has used, whether it was to marry her to Joffrey or to, what's his name, you know?
Tyrion.
Tyrion or the next one, bad guy that got killed, bastard.
Yeah, Ramsay,
right. I mean, she has been moved around the board from piece to piece to piece, never with people she actually liked, and she's never, as far as I know, even met any guy she ever looked at twice and thought, oh, I like him, and if I didn't have to marry X, Y, or Z, I'd like to be with him. She's just kind of on her own, you know? There's not really anybody there for her.
No, it's a good point, but I also think that, like, when she was young, she had these kind of romantic ideals about guys and whatever. And now I think she has a hard, cold, bitter reality. And she's not ever going to put herself under some man's power.
Yeah.
You know, she's just not. Yep. Like, she may marry somebody, but it'll be somebody that she chooses and she vets their background carefully. And they live somewhere where she's in power, like her castle with her retainers and Bran standing outside the door in case she has any problems.
That's right.
Like, the guy gives her a hard time. She's like, all right, Bran, come here and cut this guy up.
So I think that's one of the biggest discussion points that we were looking at tonight. And I want to put a bow on the end of it. So where do you think Jon/Sansa/Littlefinger is going, at least in the near future? What's going to become of that, at least in the short term?
Well, I mean, I think Jon's going to go off and do leading army stuff. Mm-hmm. Like, try to, you know, rebuild castles on the wall and all that kind of stuff, train people to fight the whites or whatever. And maybe, you know, Sam sent him the message about the Dragonglass. Maybe go off and negotiate with Daenerys about Dragonglass. So I think Jon's going to be off doing stuff. And I think that he's going to leave Sansa in charge. You know, maybe he leaves the Onion Knight with her. But I think it's mainly going to be Sansa in charge. And so then Sansa's going to have to kind of – then Littlefinger's going to try to make his move when that happens. You know, what can he pressure Sansa into doing or kind of trick her into doing while that's going on? So I think that'll be the moment when it you know, gets testy.
Davos is pretty much attached to Jon now, isn't he? He was with Stannis, and Stannis' army is completely gone. Stannis is gone. The princess, the little girl is gone. The red lady is gone now, gone off. So yeah. He's pretty much signed up with Jon now, hadn't he?
He's Jon's guy.
That's interesting. Just didn't really see that coming.
He's Jon's right-hand guy at this point.
Yeah, that's interesting. Okay, so speaking of Brienne, I'm going to save Dany for more of the chronological order where it came in. You talk about Brienne. I just want to mention right quick, because I added her to our little outline here, they're still keeping the Tormund and Brienne on and off relationship going. I love that Brienne is in love with basically Jaime, and Tormund is in love with Brienne. And so we've got the strangest love triangle of all time.
Well, but I think Bran's kind of given up on Jaime. Like, he's kind of going his own way. She knows she's probably never going to see him again. So, but I think it's like, you know, Tormund's kind of a goofy wildling guy too. So,
I one of them would have to be a dragon for it to be any stranger, I think. let me see. We have a bit with Cersei and Jaime. What do we get from that scene? It's the scene where they're painting the map on the floor so that Cersei has her own big map that she can look at. I like that. I like how she says, "I'm the queen of the seven kingdoms," and Jaime's like, "Maybe three, you know, at best."
It's the truth.
Three, you know.
It's the truth. So she is, and so she realizes she's going to need allies, and she reaches out to Euron. But the other part of I get out of this is that, you know, we haven't heard them have a conversation since she blew up the Great Sept of Baelor, and Jaime watched. And so I wasn't sure what their relationship was going to be like after that. Because remember, Jaime killed the Mad King for trying to do that.
Yeah.
And that, you know, I thought that he might be scared of his sister or hate her. He may, you know, maybe he's still plotting to kill her. Maybe he, you know, so I, but their relationship seemed to be fine in that scene.
Yeah, I was very surprised how he pretty much laid out his thoughts, needled her a little bit. She said, "I don't care. I'm the queen. You know, forget everything else. Our parents are dead. Our children are dead. It's just you and me. All that's left is for us to just have fun and kick butt and go out in a blaze of glory." But they're like, I mean, at this point, Cersei and Jaime, in Cersei's mind, Cersei and Jaime are like, Redford and Newman, you know, in Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid. I mean, the between Danny and the White Walkers, basically the Bolivian army is outside and they're just going to go out in a blaze of glory, you know?
That's right.
So I hate it too, because we've come to where we kind of like Jaime now, and we hate seeing him falling right back. Now we do get, because of I'm going to roll that on ahead here. Because Jaime so quickly and easily signs back up with her, all right, goes back over to being her right hand, no pun intended there, Jaime, right hand man. He gets to be there next to her in the throne room when Euron Greyjoy comes in. And if you're turning to Euron Greyjoy to be an ally, you are scraping the bottom of the ally barrel. I mean, I know he's got some ships that he just built, and man, they built some really nice ships in a dang hurry there.
Mm-hmm.
They put those things together like it was a McDonald's going up.
You say that, but I mean, Varys sailed from Slaver's Bay to Westeros and back again. So.
Yeah, and meanwhile, Sam's baby is two instead of one. I can't follow the timeline. A lot of time goes by. I almost need like a chronological thing that goes along with this show.
But I think honestly, I'm happy that they don't. It's not like 24 or something where they're like second by second. You know,
right? Oh, great! Now I'm seeing Jamie
like a sand dial or something.
Kablang blang, kablang blang, kablang blang. You got to. I got a sundial turning. That's or the clock thing and the sun thing in the Citadel.
And that's it.
They need to redo the opening thing with the map, the table, and the sun, and do it with the theme from 24. That would be hilarious. Instead of the Game of Thrones theme. So what I was getting at is that Jaime gets to stand there and make smart aleck comments to try to. He's basically trolling Euron, isn't he? He's trying to get him to react to show that he's too uncouth and too unstable to be a good ally. And I think Euron did pretty well, considering he's a slime ball.
He did. I mean, I think he knew like they weren't going to let him marry Cersei just because he showed up with a bunch of boats.
Right.
That he had to prove himself and do something useful, and I think he's going to try to do that.
It's another one of these short term things, though, where you know she marries him for access to his ships, just like Rob was gonna marry
a Frey
just across the bridge.
Yep.
You know, it's so dumb. It's like, you know, okay, you marry Euron today, you get his ships tomorrow, and a week from now you're still married to Euron.
Look, she's not going to marry Euron Greyjoy. That's not going to ever happen. Not ever going
to
happen.
Hold on. Here's what I want. I'm glad you said that, because here's what I want to get to in that. Here's the last thing I can think of from the Cersei-Euron scene. What does Euron say he's going to do to convince her to marry him?
Bring a gift.
What do you think that gift is going to be? Because I have a couple of ideas, and I am not happy about any of them.
I don't think it's going to be Tyrion.
No.
I think he's going to try to kill a dragon or bring back a dragon.
Yep. Yep.
Enslave the dragon or kill the dragon. One of the
bingo.
Other.
Yep. I think that his fleet is going to attack Danny's fleet at Dragonstone or on the open sea if they leave Dragonstone. And I think he's going to have something rigged up, like in The Hobbit, to shoot one of them down.
Mm-hmm.
That's just pure speculation. I have no. We are off the book. It's like I keep at my wife.
There's a book reference here though. In the books, he has a horn that okay. when you that supposedly when you blow it will enslave the dragons.
Ooh, yeah. Okay.
Now they haven't referenced that in the show, but I don't think that he's going to do that. But that's the book angle with that, and that's way back. Before he became king, he pulled that out. So we haven't seen it work.
Right. It's getting kind of late to be bringing something like that in. It's very deus ex machina at this point.
Sure. But man, wouldn't it be weird if both sides had dragons?
Yeah, wow. That would certainly take away Danny's whole advantage. Because right now, she's got air superiority.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's it. Right now, she's unstoppable because she has the air power. She has the air force. Everybody else is infantry and navy. She's got a freaking air force, okay? She's in the 20th century. Everybody else is in the 19th century. But if somebody else had a counter to the dragons, could neutralize the dragons or had their own dragons, suddenly the playing field is leveled and we've got Midway rather than, the Six-Day War. How's that for a or the Yom Kippur War? So, I'm just not happy about the whole Euron's going to go get you a gift thing. I hope he just goes to Walmart and get something there. The Walmart at the Citadel.
In the big picture of the Game of Thrones TV show, we've seen a siege, we've seen a big open field battle, we've seen a couple of kind of battles like that. We have not seen a naval battle.
That's true.
And we are absolutely going to get a naval battle in the next two episodes.
You got to think so, just because there's so many ships in play now.
That's right. And the ships are coming to each other. So there's going to be a big naval battle, and a bunch of ships are going to go down, and we'll see what happens. But I think that's definitely going to happen.
We're going to get Actium.
Yeah.
Man.
Trafalgar or whatever.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well... with air power. I was just going to say, my wife, every time I mention something like this, my wife is like, this isn't a spoiler, is it? And I'm like, we don't have any spoilers left. I have to keep reminding her that there are no more spoilers. We are off the books. The books are gone. We are totally in uncharted territory now, which is what I was so excited about. I'm just loving this. I want to interject here into our agenda also. Brand and Mira make it to the wall. Now, yes. There was some talk that Brand going through the wall was going to tear down all the spells and let the White Walkers come right through. So before I say anything else, what's up with that in your opinion?
I heard that theory and I get it. The idea was that the White Walker put the mark on Bran, and that when Bran went back in the cave, it allowed the White Walkers to enter, broke the protective spells in the cave and allowed the White Walkers to enter and kill everybody. And Bran barely made it out. So I think the idea is Bran still has the mark on him, and if Bran goes through, then it allows the White Walkers to come through. Hmm. I think a little too easy, like Bran walks through and the whole wall falls down and he's like, oh shit. I just think like that's, and then the walkers come rolling along. Like, I just think that would be too cheesy.
Yeah.
It's
going to be more complicated than that, surely.
I hope so. I think the spells only keep the walkers out, not the zombies.
Okay. All right, here's Brand question number two. We were just talking about the Jon Snow Sansa issue. Who's in charge? Who's really in charge? When word comes down, and given that apparently, people can go very, very fast and work and travel very, very fast.
No, they have ravens.
When word comes to Winterfell that Brand is alive, does that throw a monkey wrench in the whole thing? Does that mean that Jon and Sansa are both stepping aside because Brand would be Lord Stark?
Maybe. I think, you know, maybe Bran asked him not to tell Jon that he wants to keep doing his secret green seer thing, and he and Mira just roam around the countryside doing that. But I think, it would be more practical if he could, like, advise them directly with his visions, like, hey, this is what's going on out there. So maybe, you know, somehow he teams up with the Night's Watch and warns them, like, which fort's in danger or whatever. So,
Yeah, it's almost it's almost like he's joined the priesthood and has made himself ineligible in a way. I guess not.
I think he views it that way too. Like, he has this higher calling now, and he can't be sitting around in small council meetings talking about how much wheat they need to put aside for the winter or whatever. He's got to be doing this other stuff. So
I hope they've already put their wheat aside, because I don't know if you heard, John, but winter is here.
That doesn't look like a lot more is going to grow. No. The other angle is, you know, they've got Mira Reed with him still, and her dad is the only one that knows about John's parentage. So it may be that they tell people, don't tell anybody we're alive, and then he and Mira head down to the swamp to go visit her family.
Here's another funny thing. So when John's parentage comes out, it's conceivable that in one split second, he could go from competing with Sansa to be the Lord to competing with Dany to be the boss over there.
That's right.
But he's her nephew, right? John is Dany's nephew, not her half brother or cousin. Rhaegar.
Yes, but Rhaegar was the older brother.
Yeah.
So that he's in the direct line of succession ahead of her.
Oh wow. That's right.
I believe so.
Depending on how you see his legitimacy. Because if he's not seen as, if he's still a bastard, even though he's just a different family's bastard, then it doesn't matter.
So, did they marry? And can anybody prove any of this?
Yeah, that's a good point.
Just because Bran knows it doesn't mean anything.
Right. You got Bran vouching for you. It doesn't go a whole long way with. I'm sure Dany would be like, oh, well, then here, let me just step aside and let you have Dragonstone. Sure, yeah, I'm sure that would happen.
Yeah, here's a dragon and half my army. Go have fun.
You're right. I just want to point out, too, one thing I like about the Starks is that when winter comes, the Starks are the only house that high fives. Everybody else is like,
laughing about it, like, ah,
he's dead. I know it. Everybody else is like, oh, Lord, the winter has come. And they're like, woohoo, winter's come. We told you. We've been telling you. I just think that's hilarious. Let's see. Last few things. The Hound. We got a nice long scene with Sandor Clegane, the Hound, and the Brotherhood Without Banners back at the house where the guy and the little girl are all very depressing. Just more Game of Thrones, cut your throat and lay down and die, depressing stuff. But it's interesting to see how the Hound has developed and grown. And you got to hope that maybe when Arya inevitably meets up with him again, she won't kill him, right? Because she already was softening on him a little bit. And in fact, I think they had determined at the Black and White House that she didn't want to kill him anymore, right? So
I think she doesn't. So I think that wouldn't happen. She wouldn't kill him. And I don't know whether he's going to beat Arya again or Sansa, but I do think he's a different person now. And I think, you know, so many characters in the show go through so much stuff. And I think he's one of those who's done terrible things and been through terrible things, but he's turning into a better person. And yeah. I like that. I like the Hound. Do I think he's going to live a long time? Probably not. but I like that scene in the house where he's asking, you know, the guy, like, what's so special about you? Why do you get to keep coming back? What does your God think about that? I thought those were really good questions.
Yeah.
I think he's turned into a good character.
Well, and also he got to see in the fire, and he could see the army of zombies coming down. What was that all about?
And that's true. I mean, that's the kind of thing, like, right up to this point, only, like, Thoros has seen that kind of stuff in the fire, or the Red Woman. So that's a big deal.
Mm-hmm. I didn't know what to make of that. Suddenly he's seeing it. What? They have to be going somewhere. You don't spend that much time on a character and set up that he's seeing what's going on to then just turn around. I mean, it's got to be useful, right? In other words, they've now made it to where... let me just put it to you this way. We are now at the point, as of this episode, where if later on in this season or next, somebody comes up to the Hound and says, we need you to drop everything and help fight those ice zombies, before he'd have been like, get boogered, you blah, blah, right? Now he'll be like, oh, heck yeah, I'm with you. You see what I mean?
I agree.
It's put him in the point where it won't take much persuading to get him to realize what's the real enemy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's interesting. Okay. By the way, another thing about the Brotherhood are, at least to me, and again, I've read all the books except the last one, though it's been a while. What is the deal with the Brotherhood? I mean, people don't even know who these guys are. It's Barrett Dondarrion and Thoros of Myr. And there's a flaming sword, and he keeps coming back to life. Can you give us like a quick minute, 2 minute update on who these people are?
Okay. Let's go in the Wayback Machine.
Woodley, 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 woodley.
You know, first book. Ned is alive. Ned is the Hand of the King.
Yes.
And Robert's out doing stuff, or unconscious drunk, or whatever he's doing.
That's pretty much the stuff.
Ned's running the kingdom.
Right.
And some bad stuff is going on in the Riverlands. The Mountain is out there, you know, raiding towns and pillaging and raping and stuff. And so Ned Stark says, I need somebody to go out there and take care of the situation. He says, Beric Dondarrion, you're in charge. And he says, you gather up, you know, 100 men, and I'm going to give you 100 Stark men too, or something like that, or maybe it was 50 of each. And their mission was to go to the Riverlands to protect the little people and fight back against the Mountain. And they were appointed by the power of the king, Robert. Okay? So they get there. They start doing that. Robert dies. Ned dies. Their authority, their legal authority to do their mission died with them. Mm-hmm. They certainly didn't want to go back to King's Landing, where the Lannisters are now in power. And the Mountain was, you know, moving into King's Landing. And so they basically set up as kind of a Robin Hood operation, where they stayed in the Riverlands and they went underground and they fought back against the Lannisters and the Freys and people like that to protect the little people. In the books, there is a side thing where they get dragged into the whole Lady Stoneheart operation to help her in revenge against the Freys. And at times they help, there's a book plot where, they help out, Brienne protect some kids, against, some bandits that they keep coming back. And so, but basically they're kind of, Dondarrion was a former noble, and Thoros of Myr was a red priest who used to hang around King's Landing and drink and fight in tournaments and stuff. And now they're basically these kind of Robin Hood, protect the little people kind of guys. And I think they're some of the few people in the whole story who care about regular human beings and want to do good things for them and are not in it for themselves and their own power.
Okay. And we don't know exactly why Dondarrion keeps coming back to life, other than just that, I mean, because Thoros of Myr, I mean, he's a priest of the same fire god as Melisandre, right?
Yes.
Okay, yay. Well, we don't like that god, so.
I think Dondarrion keeps coming back because there's some reason, like, and we don't know what it is, but... it's going to be interesting to see what happens if they go up north with him. So
we're not,
I don't know, I'm kind of excited about that.
We're not getting Lady Stoneheart at all, are we?
No.
Okay, about that. Less said the better about that. Sam is in the Citadel, and we get kind of a montage, a very gross, disgusting montage. There's a lot of gross and disgusting stuff in this episode. It was funny. That was all intended to set up the fact that he's stuck, basically being like an intern, not getting to do any of the stuff he's come there to. He's not really studying. He's just doing all the gross stuff. When he actually gets a decent job, which is helping with an autopsy, he's basically just weighing organs out of a dead body. So he's gotten literally the crap end of the deal is what Sam has gotten. But he's eyeballing those secret books in the hidden room, which he thinks could help. Now, I might have gotten distracted or something. One minute I saw him looking at the keys, and the next minute he and Gilly are reading a book. Did he go and get those books?
Yes.
Okay, he did. I wasn't sure for some reason. I think somebody said something to me or whatever. So he did steal the keys and go get the books.
He stole the keys from a guy sleeping and went and got the books out of the secure part of the library.
Okay, and that's where he was finding out things like there's dragon glass under Dragonstone?
Yes.
Okay.
On the island of Dragonstone.
Okay. And he also was maybe finding something else out. I can't remember. It seemed like he was finding several useful things there.
That was the big thing that he was writing John about. I mean, there has to be something else big that he can find out here that's going to help turn the tide of the war. That's the whole point of him being there.
Right.
You know, so.
When he's not changing bedpans. And then the other thing that happened to him of interest is that there's like a bunch of cells. I couldn't tell if they were prisons or what. Dungeons, whatever they were.
I would say it's more like an isolation ward.
Like a leper colony or something?
Like a communicable disease isolation ward, you know, in the Westeros version.
And a certain arm comes out, and the voice belongs to that guy that was going to marry Lady Mary on Downton Abbey. Oh, and was also... You see how I did the double fake out there. That's who he was. That's who he played. And also, he was, of course...
Jorah Mormont.
Jorah Mormont that was Danny's bodyguard, basically, for a while until he got booted out of the camp. So apparently the grayscale has gotten pretty severe for him.
Yes. But he's at the right place. You know, the Maesters have the most...
of anybody.
Knowledge of anybody, and if anybody can help heal it or slow it down, they will.
Looked like it wasn't helping too much.
Well, he's not dead. They cut his arm off. I don't know.
Where do you think that's going? Is it going to be... Because there's been some speculation over the last year or so that maybe the grayscale acts to turn back the zombies or the dragons, or what do you think they're setting up with this? They've gone to great lengths to give him grayscale and to have him...
Oh, I don't think there's any magic powers. I just think he's going to, you know, sacrifice his life to protect Danny at some point down the road. That's the whole sum of what I see in his future.
I think that the cure for grayscale is RGB or CMYK. If you don't use Photoshop, you may not get that little stupid joke. let's see. Lastly, well, no, there's two more. Arya has done her deed of wiping out the entire Frey family, root and branch, which I was said, yay, they needed killing. She wouldn't be convicted in Texas of that. And then she's riding her little horsey along. I'm sure she got the pick of the stables of the Freys, right? Of the tower, of the twins. Mm-hmm. And she encounters some Lannister soldiers. I immediately said, uh-oh, Lannisters, because they got the red cloaks on and the gold and everything. Look like little mini Jamies. And she basically tells them while she's eating that rabbit, oh, I'm going to go kill the queen. They're like, ha, 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 ha. And I like how she's sitting there. She doesn't do the, all right, yeah. She just kind of smiles, you know, like, what? That, you know, that's, I told you what I was. I'm honest with you. I wasn't lying. So what did you make of that scene, and where is this going? Is it that obvious?
Well, I mean, when she first shows up, my thought is she's going to kill all these guys.
Yeah.
And oh, I think that was maybe her thought when she rode up to him.
Oh, she may yet.
But then she talked to him, and they're just regular people. They're not butchers like the other Lannister people.
Right.
And they shared the food with her.
Yeah.
And the wine. I thought that was very hospitable.
Yeah.
So I don't think she's going to kill him. I think she was just visiting with him, and she's going to leave him and go on their way. Go on her way.
All right. I'm going to tell you, John, I will not. I hope you're right, even though they're Lannisters. But I would not be shocked if the next time we see Arya, she's riding away from that little camp and they're all dead. Would not surprise me a bit.
Okay, so you know who the guy singing was, right?
Apparently some pop singer. I don't know. I didn't have no clue.
Ed Sheeran. I don't know. My daughter recognized him. I didn't.
Okay. Here's the thing. This is what's going to tell the tale. If she lets him live, and it's kind of funny, this little girl lets these several soldiers live. Says it all, doesn't it?
Armed and armored. Yes.
Yeah. And she's just a little girl. If she lets them live, she's redeemable. If she kills them all, I don't think there's any hope for her. I think she's just going to continue on her spiral of revenge and death, and it's going to eventually come back to bite her. Karma seems to work that way with people on a vengeance kick. You know, they kill, and then they meet a bad end. I don't want poor little Arya, who I love. I adore Arya. I don't want anything bad to happen to her. I want her to be redeemable. But I'm so afraid that if we see those soldiers dead at the beginning of next episode, it's them saying to us, she's beyond hope, and don't hold out any candles for her coming back to the good side, you know. And I'm not saying she's not on the good side, but I think that she's gotten to where she's enjoying it too much.
Right. That there is nothing for her but death and vengeance.
Right. Yeah, I'm afraid that's all that's left of her now. That in order to become the best assassin she could be, it wasn't that she quit being Arya Stark, you know, who are you, I'm no one or whatever. It's not that she quit outwardly thinking that that's who she is like they were wanting her to. I think that it's inwardly she quit being that person.
Mm-hmm.
And that's sad, but that's understandable, I think. All right, and we say this one for last because it was the last big scene. We got, basically, we just, and I don't know if you watched the after the credits deal, but the producers were saying basically that they wanted to just have an extended scene with almost no dialogue where we just see Dany returning home and the impact that has on her. And there was a couple of scenes, there were a couple of moments in that extended scene where people could have interacted with her and they didn't. Like one was Tyrion kind of held back and let her walk ahead. And then another was when Grey Worm started to go up to her and Dany's personal administrative assistant kind of grabbed him and pulled him back, you know?
Yep.
Just to let her kind of soak it all in. So, anything to take from that scene beyond just the surface, the obvious, that she's back and ready to kick butt?
No, I mean, I think it was supposed to be like this big emotional thing where she's back home in Westeros, she's back home at Dragonstone where she was born.
Yeah.
You know, it was kind of weird there was nobody there.
Yeah, you know, Stannis didn't leave a person behind. Dang.
I mean, I think, first of all, I think he did leave some people behind, and then they saw the dragons, and they like ran out the back door and you know, got in the rowboat and rode away.
Yeah, that may be it.
But I think, in the big, big picture, like, if you're Jaime and you knew she was coming, why didn't you put a couple hundred guys there?
Yeah.
Because he did look like it would be a really unpleasant place to take if the defenders had some clue what they were doing.
Yeah,
so that's the kind of thing I thought about. I was like, you couldn't send 200 guys over there on a boat and have them up on the walls with bows? And Daenerys is walking out in front of everybody like they know nobody's there.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Like one guy with a bow and it's over.
Yep.
The dragons are like, well, y'all run your own.
Flap, 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 flap. Well, it's true. I mean, and they walked up to those doors, and she just had two soldiers with her. And I'm like, how are they going to get through these doors? This could take the rest of the episode just to get through these doors. And they open the doors. They're not even locked. And I'm going, well, okay. I guess Stannis left the note.
Maybe it's supposed to be like they secured the island and they came back and brought her ashore.
Yeah, like MacArthur landing on the Philippines. Yeah, they had there was somebody with a camera clearly already there, which means somebody was there ahead of him. He didn't just get it. He wasn't the first guy off the boat, right? Now, they acted like she was the first person off the boat, but you got to think that like the...
Yeah, I think it was probably more like, I mean, that makes a lot more sense to me.
Yeah.
Like the Unsullied came ashore, it swept the whole island, and then they were like, okay, it's clear.
Grey Worm and the Secret Service. They had hands up to their ears, you know, whispering into their lapels, you know, yeah. Oh, boy. Dragon 1 is on the island. Dragon 1 is on the island. Clear the room. So, yeah, I think so. Let me thank our patrons real quick, and we'll do our last couple of quick features. We have to, again, like I said, we are no longer part of Earth Station 1, so we were relying entirely now on you guys to spread the word and to help keep us on the air, and our patrons that are with us so far are doing a great job of that. Of course, Nicholas Cottrell, Chris Thrash, our most recent addition, Phil Amthor of WeHaveDonuts.com, Dave Medinas, Mark Squire, Dave Powell, Jared Albrick, Rich Reimer, Michael Kirshner, Bill Matthews, Joey Miller, and Matthew Wagstaff. We thank you guys all so much for all that you do to help the show and all of our shows stay on the air. And we'll be doing an AU Wishbone show pretty soon. And like I said, we're also doing a new Open Wheel episode tomorrow. So be on the lookout for that in this same network feed. Any thoughts about... I mean, I know we have a few listener questions, right? But any other thoughts going forward, since we won't talk again about this until after episode 4?
I mean, I've told you one of my big predictions for this year is definite naval battle coming up the next two episodes.
Okay. The next two episodes, number 2 is Stormborn. So that's clearly got to be something to do with Dany on Dragonstone. That's where she was born. And The Queen's Justice, interestingly, is episode 3. We don't know beyond that. We also know that episode 3 was written by Benioff and Weiss, the two show runners. So that's an interesting one, too. That could be a very important episode because they actually wrote it. They tend to write episodes that really move things along. They wrote this one, the current one.
Okay. I didn't even know they were releasing the names, and I hadn't looked. I didn't know the names before you said that.
Yeah.
No, I mean, at some point, John is going to come. I think John's going to come meet Daenerys to talk about the Dragonglass. They won't know his parentage. Tyrion will vouch for him, and they'll have some kind of posturing about you bend the knee, and John will be like, "No, I'm not. I'm worried about these whites. You need to help me with that." And Dany will be conflicted because she'll believe it's real threat, but she can't abandon, you know, what she's doing, you know, to go up to the north yet. So.
Well, she'll be all, "Yeah, I can't have this King of the North thing. That's not going to work."
Well, but also, like, she's like, maybe she believes John about the whites, the White Walkers, but she's also like, I can't take my army up there and turn my back on the Lannisters.
Right. No, that's true.
I got to deal with things that are in front of me first. But also, like, she's got Dorne. She's got Highgarden. You know, if they take out the Greyjoy fleet, she could, you know, go to King's Landing and take Cersei and Jaime out.
Well, let me ask you this. This just occurred to me as you're saying that. We've always kind of assumed that the order it would be resolved is deal with the inner threat, Cersei, and then with the existential threat, the White Walkers last, and that'd be the big finale of the show. But think about this. Number one, they're kind of a non-personalized threat to begin with, whereas Cersei's a very personal threat that almost would make a more satisfying ending. In other words, maybe Dany and John in the North will all deal with the White Walkers, and then once they're defeated, then you go back and solve the battle for the throne. I don't think anybody's really talked about doing it in that order before. And here's an example of how that would work. That's how Babylon 5 worked, okay? In Babylon 5, we kept building up toward both this existential threat with the shadow aliens, which was this huge galactic war, but also with the internal war with Earth being under a bad guy's rule. And the way it played on Babylon 5 is they dealt with the shadows first and then went back to Earth to face the more personalized human face personality threat, because the aliens were a big scary menace, but they didn't have a personality. They didn't have a face. You know what I mean? So it's kind of like I could see them actually cobbling together an everybody except Cersei and the Lannisters army to fight the White Walkers, and what's left of them then is on a more even footing with Cersei. What do you think about that?
I get it. It's interesting. I hadn't thought about it that way. I'm skeptical that it'll happen that way, just because I believe that the real fight is the White Walkers, and I think the humans are going to lose for a while. And they lose badly for a while.
Well, I can just see them going. Everybody goes to Cersei and says, look, we all, you know, want to fight each other again, round 15 or whatever. But we all understand now that the existential threat are the White Walkers, and we all need to team up for now against them, and then we can sell our business later. And I could see Cersei now, the current Cersei, I could see her saying to all of them, y'all go do that. I'm not going up there.
She wouldn't send one guy at the end. As soon as they left, she
exactly
backstabbed
them. I can see her saying, we can have this fight now, and then the White Walkers can come and clean up the remains. Or y'all can go deal with the White Walkers, and I'll be down here when you're ready. But I'm not going. I can totally see her just blowing the whole thing off and using it as a way to winnow down the enemy.
That's why I think Daenerys won't go face the Walkers till she's dealt with Cersei, because I think she's not going to turn her back on Cersei.
That's interesting, isn't it? Wow.
It is.
It's a two-front war. It's a two-front war.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. She needs a non-aggression pact. Who do you trust more in a non-aggression pact, the White Walkers or Cersei?
Well, but it's also like there's no guarantee that, like, John and Daenerys are going to be allies either.
No, not at all. Right. I agree. Listener questions.
All right. We only got a couple.
Okay.
The first one is from...
I sent you some in email. Did you get those?
I got it. Okay. The first one is from Al Catero.
Hey, Al. What's up?
And his question is, any way Cersei can overcome dynasty failure?
Well, that's a little bit of what we've been talking about, that Cersei is going to approach all this stuff, I think, in a different way than everybody else. Everybody else is able to put their own personal desires, if not aside, at least on an even par with just survival. I think Cersei now has been pushed to the point she doesn't care. She doesn't care about surviving. She's just like, I want to be the last person standing on the top of the anthill, or you can all die and I don't care. You know, that's kind of how I see her now.
I think that's fair. I mean, I think before she was very concerned about building something for her children, but that's gone now.
Mm-hmm.
Something that would endure for them, and that's not an option anymore.
I think if the White Walkers overran the North and then came for her, she'd be like, well, it was a nice run, and then just let the whole city get blown away by them.
Or blow up the whole city before they got there.
Yeah, and not even bat an eye about it. Yeah.
I can see that. All right, our next question comes from Chris Hayes, who says, if Game of Thrones were a sporting event, how big a favorite would Daenerys be to grab the Iron Throne?
Oh, well, see, that's the thing. On paper, she is, but other teams cheat. It's kind of like she's the current Alabama team, but Jackie Sherrill is coaching. coaching one of the other is down at Mississippi State, man. You know,
we've seen big armies that seemed unbeatable before, and bad things happen to them. You know, So I wouldn't put all your eggs in that basket yet. Sure, she's the favorite, and she's got a lot of power behind her. I mean, I think at some point the Dothraki are going to be riding horses around Westeros, causing problems for people, and that's going to be a big advantage for her. So she has to be the favorite, but Cersei isn't, in the Red Keep, and she has a good bit of forces left, and Qyburn's a pretty clever guy, and they may come up with some things. So they still have a shot, and Jon still has a shot. So, his next question is:
I got a follow up question to that for you. Is winter coming to Essos?
What do you mean Essos? The other continent?
Yeah.
Yes.
Because has Dany led the Dothraki to Westeros only for them to go, why is it so dang cold? How come all the grass is dead? Our horses don't have anything to eat. You brought us over here, and it's like Antarctica. Why are we invading Antarctica, Daenerys? You know,
I think they've had winter. I think they're kind of like the Mongols or whatever. Like they're part of the world gets cold too.
All right, I was wondering that. All right,
all right. His next question is: should Sansa be the queen of the North instead of Jon being the king of the North? Would she be a better choice of ruler with Jon as like a general?
We talked about that a little bit. Probably, honestly. I mean, I think he does a good enough job. Hey, what did you think about him basically pardoning the two families, even though Sansa said strip them?
I got it. Like, I was kind of with Sansa. Yeah. I was. Let me say this. Like, at the other end of the spectrum is, the Boltons. And I think, the Boltons should all be hunted down and killed, and everybody should be killed. And
Nuremberg.
And you could either, take the Dreadfort down stone by stone and sow salt into their fields.
Right.
But another thing is you could give it to one of your other guys and say, this is your place now. Just don't do the stuff the Boltons did and clean the place out.
Right.
And that's a huge reward. So, it is a very – I mean, it is one of the few things that John could do to really reward people who took big chances on him. He could say, look, I'm going to give you these lands that you didn't have before. So I wondered if he would do that for the free folk, but apparently not. So the idea that, the other thing is Sansa has learned a lot, but a lot of it was what not to do. Yeah. I don't think Sansa has actually spent a bunch of time watching anybody who was an effective ruler do anything.
No.
So I don't think she knows. I think she knows what not to do, and she has some kind of instincts from watching Cersei and other people use power, and Littlefinger. So she is good at the intrigue part, but the leadership part.
Right.
John is pretty good at right
See,
now.
I thought there's a couple of things here. This is making me remember a couple of things I wanted to mention real quick. I thought that Sansa was way out of line when John said, you don't need to undermine me in front of people. And she said, well, that's what Joffrey said. Do you want to be like Joffrey? And I wanted to say, that's a BS comparison, okay? Because it wasn't that John said, don't question me, don't contradict me. He just said, don't do it when I'm up here in front of everybody and I need that authority. Right? There's a difference between never hearing dissension at all, never allowing any dissension or questioning at all, versus not wanting it out in public, right? Airing the dirty laundry in public. And I think that it was very unfair of her to say that, and I think that they had her say that to show more dissension between her and John. I mean, I'm always looking for the purpose. I'm always looking for the reason, the motivation, why the writer put something in there. And I think the writer put that in there to give another motivation. It's just like, it's just like with the thing over the two families that were forgiven. I don't know that decision is ever going to be referenced again. For all I know, they only used that as a thing for them to disagree over, that the actual subject matter had to be plausible when we heard it, but it may never matter again because the only thing that really mattered was it was something for Jon and Sansa to disagree over. You see what I mean?
That's it. No, I agree with you.
Okay.
And the lesson there is that Jon and Sansa need to communicate, and right. They need to have, I don't want to get into the process piece of this, but they need to have either small council meetings where Sansa's part of it,
right,
where they just need to have meetings with just the two of them on a regular basis, where John talks about, these are the things I'm going to bring up to the big group, what do you think, before he does it.
Absolutely.
And I think Sansa would contribute in that way and give good, you know, make and give him good advice.
Absolutely.
So, anyhow.
Any other questions?
And his last question is, is Bran the most worthless character no. currently in Game of Thrones?
Well, at the moment, but theoretically he has great potential, because he's A, the living Stark heir, technically, right? B, he's got mutant superpower. He's like the Professor X of Westeros. So, yeah, being dragged through the woods is one thing, but now that he's back into something like civilization, you got to think that stuff's going to start happening with him, right?
I agree. He's been, you know, barely involved in the larger story, you know, since he disappeared. Like, he,
yeah.
And it's time for his power to prove useful. Like, as you said, there's only 12 episodes left.
Right.
He needs to get somewhere where he can use his power and use it in a way that contributes to good things happening, yeah, you know, for the in the war against the whites.
I agree.
But, I mean, I don't know if he's the most useless character, but he's up there.
But he's, I think he's going to be very useful in the days to come. They just need to get on with it. But like I said, now that he's back through the wall, I think we're ready to, maybe Mira will actually do something besides be the dragger and he the draggee, and we'll actually see some stuff happening. All right. Any last thoughts? Well, I guess we reconvene in about a month after episode 4. So, and in the meantime, we'll be doing some AU Wishbones and some other things. Any last thoughts about this episode or what's coming up?
No, I'm excited. My only last thought is I've read and listened to a lot of speculation over the last couple of weeks that basically said they don't think George R. Martin is ever going to write the books now.
Yeah, right. He's going to sit back. I mean, he could just go to Tahiti and kick back with a tropical drink and while the days away, man. I mean, he's taken a very, very popular book series, one of the more popular fantasy book series, and turned it into a television phenomenon. I mean, it wasn't that long ago, John, that you and I were talking about, man, we wish they'd make a movie out of this, or, hey, it would be even cooler if they'd make an HBO series out of it. We, in our wildest dreams, A, probably didn't think it was ever going to happen, and if it did, B, we never dreamed that everybody in the world, pretty much, or at least quite a few, would be watching it and talking about it, and it would be this huge phenomenon that it's turned into. So, who saw all this coming? Certainly not us, I don't think.
No, but it's, you know, it's depressing because I do want to read the books.
Right, right, right. Well, we knew it was worthy of all this, but we didn't see it actually happening, because there's a lot of things that are worthy of this that don't get it. But yeah, I've said all along, I'm looking forward to reading the books now just to get the second version, because I'm pretty sure the books are going to go differently than the TV show. And that's fine for me. I'm not going to be disappointed if the books are different than the TV show. I'm going to be excited because that means I get a whole new story.
That's it.
That would be awesome. Imagine if, like, George Lucas got some great science fiction writer to go back and, like, write a whole new Star Wars with a different ending than the freaking Ewoks. I'm all over that. I'd be all over it.
But imagine, like, you know, he was sitting there and the ending of the movie of, you know, Star Wars, you know, yeah, Return of the Jedi, or, you know, Empire Strikes Back,
yeah,
was received a certain way. And then he changed the next movie based, you know, he came out with two versions of the next movie based on that. And I think that's kind of, George R. Martin is going to look at how the yeah, ending of the TV show is perceived, and it has to influence his writing. You're a writer. If people said it was great, it would, yeah, influence you, wouldn't
absolutely
it?
No, right. I mean, you're going to, well, I mean, it's always a conflict. There's always a cross current between doing what you think the vision is in your mind and your heart versus doing what people will like. And you don't want to compromise your vision, but on the other hand, you certainly want to do stuff people will like, if at all possible. So you really try to accommodate both and hope you don't compromise either one, if that makes sense.
Yep.
So, all right. Well, that's enough for us. Good, long, nice discussion tonight. Join us for the next installment of this coming up in about, what, 3 or 4 weeks. We'll do it after episode 4, probably toward the end of middle late August, right? Somewhere in there.
Yep.
And in the meantime, we got other shows, so stay on this feed and you'll see our other programs coming along. I guess the Rocket's going to get on out of here for another week. John, we'll talk to you soon, man.
What is dead may never die.
And what do we say to death?
Not today.
Not today. Bye, everybody.
Griffin, Tranquility Base here. The Eagle has landed.
This has been a White Rocket Entertainment production.